Okay, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Shalom, everybody. For those of you who may not know me, I'm Eddie Chumney of Hebraic Heritage Ministries, and I'm going to be speaking in this session on the subject of signs of the Great Tribulation. And the Feast of Tabernacles is called, of course, the Season of Our Joy. And in the Bible, the end of the exile of the house of Jacob and the gathering and uniting of the 12 tribes of Israel, meaning the fulfillment of the prophecy of Ezekiel chapter 37, verses 15 through 28, where the God of Israel told Ezekiel to take two sticks. And actually, the Hebrew word there is eitz, which means tree. He actually said take two trees. One tree is for the northern kingdom, or the house of Israel, or the house of Joseph, or Ephraim, also called the ten tribes. And the other eitz, or the other stick or tree, is for the southern kingdom, or the house of Judah. And they are to be joined one to another. And it says in Ezekiel chapter 37, verses 21 and 22, that he's going to bring his people back to the land. And then once this is done, it speaks about the Messianic era, that David, my servant, will be king over them. And one of the terms for the Messiah is Messiah, son of David, referring to the kingly Messiah. And it says then that they will be keeping his statutes, his judgments, his Torah, and he's going to make a covenant of peace with them, and he's going to set up his tabernacle among them and dwell with them. So when the prophets describe the gathering and uniting of the 12 tribes of Israel and the end of the exile, it uses the terms of joy, singing, shouting, and these are terms that are associated with the Feast of Sukkot. Because the Feast of Sukkot is a harvest festival, and we are told in Hosea chapter 1 that in the judgment of the northern kingdom that they were to be scattered into the nations of the world. In Hosea chapter 1, there's a marriage that we're told about there between Gomer and Hosea, and three children are mentioned as a result of this marriage in Hosea chapter 1. And the first one was named Jezreel in Hosea chapter 1 verse 4, which means God will sow or God will scatter. And the idea is that in the judgment of the northern kingdom, that they're being sown into the nations. They're being scattered and planted as seed in their exile. And so if the God of Israel is likening his people being in exile to him scattering seed amongst the nations, there's going to be a time when he's going to harvest that seed. In other words, the time that the exile is going to end. And Sukkot is a celebration of the fall harvest season. Sukkot is the season of our joy. The end of the exile is likened unto joy, singing, and celebration, shouting. It's associated with comfort. And as Brad taught you earlier today, the bringing together of the four species as one is a sign of the unity of his people. And so the gathering, uniting the 12 tribes of Israel is the 12 tribes being united. And one of the ways that the Bible symbolizes oneness is a marriage. So the gathering and uniting of the 12 tribes of Israel is likened to a marriage. It says in Jeremiah chapter 33, verse 11, the voice of joy, the voice of gladness, the voice of the bridegroom, and the voice of the bride. That's wedding talk. And what it links with that at the end of verse 11 is, I'm going to cause to return the captivity of the land as at the first. And then it says in Jeremiah chapter 31, verse 10, hear the word of the Lord, O ye nations, and declare it in the isles afar off, and say, he that scattered Israel will gather him as a shepherd does his flock. So the one that's scattered Israel is the one that's going to gather Israel. And when he gathers Israel, he does so as a shepherd does his flock. Well, Yeshua said in John chapter 10, verse 11 and verse 14, I am the good shepherd. And so it's the good shepherd that's going to gather the exiles, and he who scattered will gather, which means it was Yeshua who scattered his people in the nations of the world. Well, the one that scattered his people in the nations of the world is the one that made covenant with them at Mount Sinai. And the one that made covenant with them at Mount Sinai is the one that gave the Torah to them at Mount Sinai. And at Mount Sinai, there was a marriage that took place between the one that brought them out of Egypt and gave them the Torah, that would be Yeshua, and the people that he brought out of Egypt. That's the house of Jacob. We're told that a marriage took place in Jeremiah chapter 2, verses 1 through 3. And the name of the people that he brought out of Egypt, Exodus chapter 19, verse 3, is the house of Jacob. So there was a marriage that took place at Mount Sinai. There was the breaking of the covenant initially transpired through the worship and the building of the golden calf. So he that made the covenant scattered, and the one that scattered is going to gather as a shepherd does his flock. And then when he gathers, it goes on to say in Jeremiah chapter 31, verse 13, then will the virgin rejoice in the dance. So the gathering is likened to a marriage and the joy of a marriage. And then it goes on to say, I will turn their mourning, that's the exile, into joy. That's the end of the exile. Sukkot. Of course, you're here at the Sukkot. What's the name of the Sukkot here? The season of our joy. I will turn their mourning into joy. I will comfort them. And so, following a marriage, you have a marriage celebration. So the Bible describes the marriage as the gathering, uniting of His people from the nations of the world where they've been scattered, the uniting of Northern Kingdom and Southern Kingdom. And the marriage is unto the one who gave the Torah at Mount Sinai, and the one who scattered them, and the one that's going to gather them. The bridegroom is Yeshua the Messiah. And now the celebration of the marriage event is Him setting up His kingdom. It's Him setting His feet down on the Mount of Olives, setting up His kingdom, teaching the Torah to all nations from Jerusalem, Isaiah chapter 2 and verse 3. His kingdom and the kingdom rule is the celebration of the marriage. So the marriage precedes the celebration of the marriage. And so the celebration is going to be when the bride, who is redeemed, she rules with her bridegroom, because in a biblical marriage, on the day of the wedding, the bridegroom is seen as a king, and the bride is seen as a queen, and as king and queen, they rule together. So it says in Revelation chapter 5 in verse 10, He's made us unto our God kings and priests, and we will reign on the earth. The one that's reigning with Him as a king and a priest is His bride, who he has gathered from the nations of the world. So, since we first have the marriage and then the celebration of the marriage, if the kingdom and Yeshua's rule and reign, where his bride that he redeems is ruling and reigning with him as a king and a priest before him, that if that is the celebration, the marriage is before, and so what begins the celebration is when he sets his feet down on the Mount of Olives. So what precedes him setting his feet down on the Mount of Olives is the Great Tribulation. So the Great Tribulation is the period, the designated period of time that the God of Israel set aside to end the exile of his people. And in ending the exile of his people, in the good shepherd gathering his flock from the nations of the world where they've been scattered, his people will realize and recognize the Messiah of the house of Jacob. Because it says in the book of Hosea in chapter 1, after the judgment is pronounced upon the northern kingdom, through the names of the children of the marriage between Gomer and Hosea, the first child in Hosea chapter 1 verse 4 being Jezreel, which means God will sow or God will scatter. And then the naming of the next two children represent the being cut off from the covenant. The next child in Hosea chapter 1 verse 6 is Lo Ruhamah. Lo in Hebrew means not. Ruhamah means mercy. So the second child is named No Mercy. The third child in Hosea chapter 1 verse 9 is Lo Ami. Lo is not, Am is people, Ami is my people. Not my people. So I'm going to scatter you in the nations of the world and you're going to be cut off from the covenant. No mercy, not my people. Then there's a promise of restoration. It says in Hosea chapter 1 verse 10, yet shall the children of Israel be as the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured nor numbered, and it will come to pass in the place where it was said, you are not my people. Where is it said, you are not my people? In the judgment. What is not my people? Lo ami. It will be said, you are the sons of the living God. Now, who is the son of the living God? John chapter 1 verse 12 says, to as many as received him, Yeshua, to them gave he power to become the sons of God. So the prophecy of restoration is from their disobedience and being cut off, they will then be restored and become sons of the living God from being not my people. So it's a prophecy that they would believe in and have the salvation of the Messiah. So that was step one in the restoration. Step two of the restoration is Hosea in chapter 1 and verse 11, where it says there, then shall the children of Judah and the children of Israel be gathered together. Step one in the restoration is a return to in an embracing of the Messiah, and the ultimate return to him is a return to his Torah and to follow his Torah. That happens first, and then Hosea 1:11 says, then after the sons of the living God, then the children of Israel and the children of Judah will be gathered together and appoint themselves one head. So it's when the children of Israel and the children of Judah are gathered together, when they're united, the fulfillment of the prophecy of Ezekiel chapter 37, verse 15 through 28, is the event by which they will appoint themselves one head. They will recognize and see and agree regarding who the Messiah is. And so therefore, the revealing of the Messiah and who he is, so he's acknowledged by his people and by the world, comes about when he gathers and unites the 12 tribes of Israel. So I just showed you here in Hosea chapter 1 verse 11 that they appoint themselves one head, his people. But Yeshua prayed in John chapter 17, verse 21, I pray that they may be one. He's praying for the unity of His people. That is the unity of all 12 tribes. And then He says, then it goes on to say, that the world would believe that You sent Me. So when we have the gathering, uniting of the 12 tribes of Israel, not only will His people recognize who the Messiah is, and together they will point themselves one head, but the world will recognize that Yeshua was sent by the Father. So we're talking about an event that opens up both the eyes of His people and the eyes of the world. We're talking about an event on that scale. And so it is accompanied with signs, wonders, and miracles. So much so that once this event happens, the very first celebration of Passover after Yeshua sets His feet down on the Mount of Olives in the kingdom, it will not be a remembrance of and a celebration of the children of Israel coming out of Egypt, but it will be a remembrance and a celebration of how the exiles were gathered from all the nations of the world where they've been scattered and brought back to the land of Israel. We are told that in Jeremiah in chapter 16 and verses 14 through 16. It says, therefore, behold, the days come, says the Lord, that it will no more be said, the Lord lives that brought up the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt, but the Lord lives that brought the children of Israel from the land of the north and from all the lands where He's driven them. It won't be said, He's the one that brought us out of Egypt. It will be said, He's the one that brought us from the land of the north and from all the lands where He has driven them. So, how do we understand the way in which that is going to happen? Well, part of the reason why He's trying to draw us to the Torah is Torah means, taking it back to its root meaning, like Brad showed you earlier today, Torah comes from Yerah, and it means the teaching or the instruction of God. And also it means to lay a foundation. Now, we also know that the way we understand the Scriptures is four primary levels, right? We have the literal, the Peshat, then we have the alluding to, Remez, and then we have Darash, and we have the Sod. Well, we are told in Psalm chapter 78, verse 1, give ear, O my people, to my Torah. Verse 2 says, I will open my mouth in a parable. So in speaking about the Torah, listen to my Torah, it then says, I will open my mouth in a parable. And then the rest of Psalm 78 talks about the children of Israel coming out of Egypt and all the things that the God of Israel did for them in their journeyings. The difficulties they encountered, and also Him being with them in their victories then that He brought them through. So, put that together in a thought. Listen to my Torah, I'm going to speak in a parable, and then it talks about the children of Israel coming out of Egypt. The message that is communicated is the Torah and the things that we read in Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, it's not just history. The Torah, and one of the most fundamental Torah principles, is the things that happened to the forefathers foreshadow or prophesy what will happen to their descendants. So as He's drawing us to the Torah, if you think about what is contained in the majority of the Torah, meaning the first five books that so many now are studying on a weekly basis? What is it that you're studying now that you neglected before? Well, beginning in Genesis chapter 12, you are studying about one who was called Abraham, and a covenant was made with him that went to Isaac and Jacob. Jacob has 12 sons that become heads of the 12 tribes of Israel. And they go to Egypt. And then he brings them out of Egypt, and we're told about that generation that gets delivered from Egypt. That's what you're studying. So why are you focusing so much attention on the covenant made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and them going out of Egypt and them returning? Why is he putting that focus on your heart now? It's because of the principle that the Torah is a parable, and the things that happen to them foreshadows what will happen to their descendants. And your blueprint, your understanding of how he's going to gather the exiles of Israel and the issues that will confront you is the same as how he brought the children of Israel out of Egypt and the issues that they confronted. But it will be on a larger scale. The signs, wonders, and miracles in bringing the children of Israel out of Egypt will be so much greater. So in the opposition and the children of Israel coming out of Egypt was Pharaoh. Well, we have a beast and a beast system, a worldwide system that is opposing, not just one entity in one specific place. So we had 10 plagues, and it was in the midst of the 10 plagues and following the 10th plague that he brought his people out. Well, in the end of days, we have the book of Revelation details the judgments that are upon the nations. And as the judgments are coming upon the nations, he is at that time delivering and gathering his people from the nations of the world where they've been scattered. And then we're told in Revelation chapter 15, verses 2 and 3, and this is the group that you want to be. I saw those that got the victory over the beast, over his mark, over his image, and over the number of his name. And they play harps, they sing the song of Moses, and they sing the song of the Lamb. That is a description of the people who overcome the beast, the mark, his image, and the number of his name. Do you realize you cannot overcome the beast and his mark and his image and the number of his name unless he exists? Unless it exists? Unless you actually have someone there or something there to be in conflict with? And so as long as it doesn't exist, you can't overcome it. You have to be in competition with it or conflict with it in order to overcome it. So it's describing these people who are in conflict, and the beast is opposing them, and we're told that they overcome them. So when do we have the beast and his mark and his image and the number of his name operating and functioning in the earth? Well, in the book of Revelation chapter 13, we're told about a beast that rises up out of the sea in verse 1, and then it goes on to say in verse 5 that he continues for 42 months. And then we're told, continuing in Revelation 13, there's another beast. It's called the false prophet. And then we're told about the image and the mark. And we're told about no one may buy or sell. And we're told about 666. It's in the context of these two entities, the beast that rises up out of the sea and the false prophet coming to power. And it's talking about that 42-month period where it talks about no one may buy or sell, and the number is 666. And it's describing a people that are encountering this upon the earth. These are the people that's overcoming him. So they're described as playing harps, and they're described as singing the song of Moses and the song of the Lamb. And singing the song of the Lamb. Now, Hebraically, that description is describing for you the exiles of Israel. And the way we can make this link, and so I'm showing you that the timing of the gathering and uniting of the 12 tribes of Israel is during the Great Tribulation. And that gathering, uniting, is likened to a marriage. And the celebration of the marriage is Yeshua setting His feet down on the Mount of Olives. His people, who He's redeemed and delivered, His bride, is now going to rule and reign over the nations. And the Messiah is going to establish a covenant of peace. So, in Ezekiel chapter 34, verses 1 through 10, there's a condemnation against the shepherds of Israel. And the condemnation is they're not feeding the sheep, they're leaving them scattered. And so the application of this is the rabbis in traditional Judaism are keeping Judah scattered because they say Yeshua is not the Messiah. And the pastors in Christianity are keeping the sheep scattered because while teaching that Yeshua is the Messiah, and He is, they teach that you're not supposed to follow His Torah. So the shepherds are keeping the sheep scattered. And so it says in Ezekiel 34 verse 11, because the shepherds are not doing their job, I, Yahweh Elohim, I'm going to be the good shepherd to them, and I'm going to gather them. And it tells us in Ezekiel, in chapter 34 and verse 12, when He's going to do it. It says, and I will deliver them from out of all the places where they've been scattered in the cloudy and dark day. In the cloudy and dark day. The cloudy and dark day is a reference to the day of the Lord. The cloudy and the dark day is a reference to the great tribulation period. That is the designated time for this event to happen. And so, these are the people who Messiah is gathering from the nations. Is who gets the victory over the beast, over His mark and His image, and over the number of His name. They play harps. And they sing the song of Moses. And they sing the song of the Lamb. Singing is joy. So, it's thematically connected to the Feast of Tabernacles. And now, the end of the exile is likened unto joy. It says in Jeremiah in chapter 31 and verse 7, thus says the Lord, sing with gladness for Jacob, shout among the chief of the nations, publish ye, praise ye, and say, O Lord, save your people, the remnant of Israel. What's said during Sukkot? Hosanna, save now. Hosanna, save now. O Lord, save your people. Sing, shout. It's thematically associated with the Feast of Sukkot. And then it goes on to say, Jeremiah chapter 31, verse 13, then will the virgin rejoice in the dance, like into a marriage. I will turn their mourning, that's exile, into joy. That's end of the exile, but joy is Sukkot. And I will comfort them. So, the song of the Lamb, Yeshua, is the Lamb of God that takes away the sin of the world. John chapter 1, verse 29. The song of the Lamb is the same as the Lord's song. And the Lord's song is mentioned in Psalm 137 and verse 4. And if we look at Psalm 137, verses 1 through 4, which is what we're going to do now, the Lord's song is parallel or the same as the Song of Zion. The Song of Zion is the Lord's song, which is the song of the Lamb. And so, Revelation 15, verses 2 and 3 is proclaiming the joy of the end of the exile, Messiah redeeming His people and getting victory over the beast's mark and His image and the number of His name. So now, in Psalm 137 verse 1, it says, by the rivers of Babylon we sat down and we wept whenever we remembered Zion. So Babylon, which is exile, you weep. Exile is associated with the time of weeping and mourning. Look, we have a whole book of the Bible, the book of Lamentations. Lamentations, weeping. What is it lamenting? His people broke the covenant, went away from the Torah, and are exiled in the nations of the world. So exile is a time of weeping, mourning. lamenting. And then it says in verse 2 that we hanged our harps on the willows. Willow tree. And a willow tree is also called a weeping willow. And so you're hanging your harp, which is your instrument of singing and praising the Lord. And who in the Bible is most socially, most closely connected with the harp and playing the harp? It's David. And look, David composed most of the Psalms. And so he composed most of the Psalms with his harp. So a harp is associated with singing and praising the Lord. And the harp, singing and praising the Lord in joy, is associated with the end of the exile. So, but in Babylon, you hang your harp on a weeping willow tree. And then it says in verse 3, there, those that took us captive required of us a song. They're mocking. And the mocking is with these words, sing us one of the songs of Zion. The mocking is, sing now. And the answer is, how shall we sing? How shall we sing the song of Zion? Psalm 137, verse 4. How shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? What's the strange land? Babylon or exile. You cannot sing the Lord's song. You cannot sing the song of the Lamb in Babylon, in exile. You can only sing that song when you are no longer in exile. And in bringing His people back from exile, the Scripture says He's going to bring you to Zion. To Zion. And Zion is a term for Jerusalem. It says in Jeremiah, in chapter 3, verse 14, I am married unto you. I will take you one of a city, two of a family, and bring you to Zion. I'm married, I'm going to bring you to Zion. I'm married, I'm going to bring you to Zion. The marriage is not in Babylon. The marriage is in Zion or in Jerusalem. And so He's taking His people from Babylon, from the nations, and He's bringing them to Zion. And so how do we understand the journey from exile to Zion? How do we understand that journey of Him delivering His people? Well, it's likened unto Sukkot. Because when the children of Israel came out of Egypt in the wilderness, they journeyed in tents, Sukkot. And so, actually when you're celebrating the Feast of Tabernacles, you are rehearsing and you're celebrating these things. You're rehearsing leaving your home and going out to a gathering place together where you're celebrating the themes of Sukkot. You're actually practicing and rehearsing the way in which He's going to deliver His people from the nations and their exile. And so then the children of Israel, in their journeys, they were led by the cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night. Exodus chapter 13, verses 21 and 22. But in describing Him gathering His people from the nations of the world where they've been scattered, it says in Isaiah chapter 4, verse 5, it says, and the Lord will create upon every dwelling place of Mount Zion and upon her assemblies. So in this verse, Mount Zion is defined as every dwelling place. In this verse, Mount Zion is defined as all her assemblies. Mount Zion is a collective term to refer to all the assemblies. And it says what's going to be there? A cloud and a smoke by day and the shining of a flaming fire by night. So the ultimate return of the nations of the world to the land of Israel by the Good Shepherd, by the Messiah, He will do it in the form of the cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night. Because that's how He did do it. He did lead His people out, cloud by day, pillar of fire by night. He will lead them out, cloud by day, pillar of fire by night. And then it says, for upon all the glory shall be, and it says in Hebrew, this is Isaiah chapter 4, verse 5, for upon all the glory will be a huppah. A huppah is a wedding canopy. So the gathering, uniting of His people from the nations is likened to a wedding. And when He's bringing them out, He says, all that upon all the glory, which is the cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night, the cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night is likened unto a huppah. There's a marriage. And then it says in verse 6, and there will be a tabernacle, a temporary dwelling place. We're celebrating the Feast of Tabernacles. So the Feast of Tabernacles is all about rehearsing these things. And earlier, we had an excellent teaching on Hoshana Rabbah. And so the celebration of the marriage, the end of the exile, is Messiah setting up His kingdom. And Hoshana Rabbah represents the joy of how things will be in the kingdom, even as we get to the fullness of the kingdom, and the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. His Spirit will be poured out upon all flesh. All flesh is going to be learning and understanding and following the Torah of the Messiah. And so this is why water is such a predominant theme for the Feast of Tabernacles. And then in Revelation chapter 7, there's a question in verses 13 and 14. Who are these who came out of great tribulation that are arrayed in white robes? So we're talking about the period of great tribulation. And the answer that is given is a quote of Isaiah chapter 49, verse 10. And it says in Revelation 7, verses 16 and 17, they will hunger no more, they will thirst no more, neither shall the sun light upon them nor any heat. For the Lamb that's in the midst of the throne, the Lamb will lead them into living fountains of water. So Sukkot is all about water and the outpouring of the Spirit. He's going to lead them by living fountains of water. So who are these that came out of great tribulation? It's speaking in Sukkot terminology. And then it says that God will wipe away all tears from their eyes. No more tears. They're in joy. They're in celebration. So this is associated with the great tribulation. The gathering and uniting of the 12 tribes of Israel is thematically associated with Sukkot. And so part of Him stirring our hearts to return to the Torah is so that we would be rehearsing in studying what it means to follow the Torah and how to do it, because it tells us in Ezekiel in chapter 20 that beginning in verse 33 that when He gathers His people from the nations, He's going to deliver them with a mighty hand, with an outstretched arm, and with fury poured out. And it says He's going to bring them into the wilderness of the people, and He's going to plead with them face to face, like I pleaded with your fathers in the wilderness, so will I plead to you. And then it says in verse 38, I'm going to purge out from among you the rebels, and they will not enter the land. Who are the rebels? Those who are not following the Torah, those who are not following the leadership in the camp. So you're rehearsing now to understand, how do I celebrate Passover? How do I celebrate Shavuot? How do I celebrate Yom Teruah, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot? How do I keep the Sabbath? And how do I follow biblical eating? You're rehearsing so that when He takes you back to the land from the nations, that you will not be among those that rebelled, like there were those that came out of Egypt. So this is the climatic event wherein the tribulation period of time is the transition time from the nations ruling over Israel while they're in exile, but in the kingdom, Israel's ruling over the nations. The tribulation is the transition period where the nations fall and His people are gathered from the nations, brought back to the land. They rise in their fullness of their rise as they proclaim Messiah as their king and He rules over them. And the climax of that battle in the transition time, the tribulation, is the great tribulation. And so it's through the return of the Torah, by understanding Messiah's returning to gather and unite the 12 tribes of Israel, and you rehearsing and being prepared and believe and identify with that, is the deliverance that He has provided and prescribed for you to be victorious at that time and in those days. But how do we know when that time is approaching? Well, He gives us signs of the tribulation. That when we see these things happen, we know that this is about what He is going to do. It's a sign of that He's going to deliver His people. And the Bible has a whole list of things that are associated with the day of the Lord. And there's a darkness part of the day of the Lord, and there's a light part of the day of the Lord. The darkness part of the day of the Lord is the tribulation, the great tribulation period. The light part of the day of the Lord is after Messiah sets His feet down on the Mount of Olives and sets up His kingdom. So we're told a list of things that are associated with the darkness part of the day of the Lord. We're told of the list of things that's associated with the light part of the day of the Lord. I'm not going to be giving you a complete list, but I do want to give you what I am watching, and I do this on a weekly basis. And for those of you who may be interested, and some of you already know, I infamously or famously have what's called a 5-minute update. It's a weekly update regarding what is going on in the news in the last week regarding these four areas that I'm going to share with you. And the reason why it's famously or infamously called a 5-minute update is because for those of you who have heard of it or listened to it, it's not 5 minutes. On average, it's about an hour. Sometimes it can go an hour and 15 minutes, hour and a half. It's not very often, half hour to 45 minutes. And on occasion, it can even be 2 hours. Just depends what the news is for the week and what I'd like to share. So here are the four things that I'm watching right now that is a sign of us entering into the tribulation and a sign that the great tribulation is approaching. And these four things that I'm watching on a weekly basis, and you can follow these things with me. I've created a blog just for this purpose, is to follow and to share these things, follow the signs. And the blog is called WatchmanOfZion.com. And there's an audio link there. We can listen to the update. And then I give a written summary of what the different parts of the update that I cover is about. And then I give you the actual link themselves from which I get the information. So you can go and you can check out. Because all that I do is pretty much just share portions of the articles and the information on a weekly basis. So these four areas is the creation of a Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital and recognition of such by the nations is an event of the tribulation, and it is a sign to be looking for the great tribulation. Now that hasn't yet happened, but the Palestinians have stated that they are going to make an effort, and they're targeting November the 29th. We'll see if it happens or not, but this is what they're saying. They're targeting November 29th to present a petition before the UN General Assembly for the UN General Assembly to vote to recognize the borders of a Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital. And so the Bible prophesies that the nations will divide the land of Israel, Joel chapter 3, verse 2, and the nations will divide the city of Jerusalem, Zechariah chapter 14, verse 2, and they're doing so in the day of the Lord, Joel chapter 1, verse 15, Joel chapter 2, verses 1 and 2, and Zechariah chapter 14, verse 1. And as a result of dividing the land of Israel and the city of Jerusalem, it says in verse 3, the Lord will fight against the nations as He fought in the day of battle. Well, we know that the Messiah is righteous in His judgment, righteous in His ways. So what justification does He have to judge the world if the United States and a few other countries are mainly responsible for creating the environment for there to be a Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital? Well, if every nation gets to voice their vote on how they view the situation, now He has justification for it. So I believe this is why prophetically things are happening such that it appears as though there is going to be a vote on the issue. The target date is November the 29th. And the reason why I say a target date is because in the Middle East, 24 hours is a long time. And so things can change in 24 hours in the Middle East. So you can only report what is on the horizon, and until it happens, then you report that it happens. But until it happens, it's just a plan. But that is the plan right now. And President Obama, in May of 2010, he said that in any agreement between Israel and the Palestinians, it must be based upon 67 borders with agreed land swaps. Well, the Palestinians are not going to agree for Jerusalem to remain and to be exclusively the capital of the nation of Israel. So when he said, my policy is agreed land swaps, he was in effect saying the dividing of Jerusalem. So since he's already stated that that's his policy in May of 2010, I'm wondering, will he, after the election, go ahead and make his policy and try to implement his policy? That's what I'm wondering and watching for. If he does, then we would have the scenario where the General Assembly is voting to recognize a Palestinian state. And if Obama would do it, he would have to do it through the UN Security Council. So if you see that scenario transpire, I believe it would be the fulfillment of dividing the land of Israel and the city of Jerusalem. That's one of the four things that I'm watching. A second item that I'm watching, because for the last 18 months there's been an uprising against Bashar Assad in Syria, and the United States, the European Union, and the Arab League is supporting the rebels, that Assad has stated multiple times, if it ever looks like I'm going to be removed from power, that before I suffer the fate of Mubarak in Egypt and Gaddafi in Libya, I will shoot missiles at Tel Aviv. And Syria has a stockpile of chemical weapons, and they work with Hezbollah in Lebanon. And so if there's ever going to be an uprooting of in a defense against the missiles and the chemical weapons that would be shot or could be shot with the missiles, then they're all centered in and around Damascus. And in Isaiah chapter 17, verse 1, there's a prophecy that Damascus will cease from being a city. And the timing of this in Isaiah 17, verse 4, is in that day. An idiomatic expression for the day of the Lord. That Damascus ceasing from being a city is a sign of the tribulation and would be a sign of the upcoming great tribulation. Number three, in Revelation chapter 6, we have the four horses of the apocalypse, and the black horse is in effect economic collapse and hyperinflation. And from the United States being $16 trillion in debt, and in the last 4 years, Each year in the last 4 years, the United States has borrowed over $1 trillion. 40% of what the government spent in each of the last 4 years is borrowed. How long are we going to be able to borrow 40% of what we spend every year? Borrow it. Do you know how it's in essence being financed now? The Federal Reserve is just printing the money. And when you have the printing of money to pay your debts, it's in effect all over. And you know what the Federal Reserve just announced on September the 13th? That every month, indefinitely, they are going to buy mortgage-backed securities. They are in effect buying the mortgages of the people of the United States. Because you see, that debt has to be paid, or there has to be collateral to that debt. And you know what, in effect, the Federal Reserve is setting up to be the collateral for the debt? Because you owe it, I owe it. Is there? It's your property. It's your land. So if you say, "Hey, you know, that's federal debt. That's not my debt. I don't have to worry about it," they'll say, "You don't have your house paid for. We'll just take your property. We'll secure it with the property." And they'll call in your property as payment for the debt when the money's worthless. And they're in the process of doing that now. So also in Europe, you know, there's an ongoing crisis in Greece, Italy, Portugal, Spain regarding whether these countries can financially stay afloat and how that will affect the euro. And there is a call by European leaders to create a political union from the economic crisis, to create a EU president that will speak for all of Europe, and for there to be, in essence, a European bureaucracy that will tell each individual state how they can spend their money, what their budgets are. In other words, a supra entity that will dictate to individual states of Europe, in effect, done away with their individual sovereignty. It's being proposed that this be accepted by the end of this year. We'll see how it plays out. But the leaders of the major European countries are calling for this. They're calling to do away with their own national sovereignty as a solution to the problem. And so, whether it is the U.S. financial situation, the European financial situation, or whether it's war breaking out in the Middle East the Strait of Hormuz being harmed, and 40% of the daily oil consumption in the world goes through the Strait of Hormuz. We have all types of possibilities that overnight we could be in financial problems. And that would be the black horse of Revelation chapter 6. So that's the third sign. The fourth one I want to give to you, but I can't elaborate for the sake of my time. And that is, the Bible refers that in the tribulation, in the day of the Lord, that there's a fall of Babylon. Now, Babylon is a generic term for the kingdom of darkness. And there is, within the kingdom of darkness, there's the one that rules over that kingdom, the king of Babylon. That's Hasatan himself. And his kingdom has many heads. It has many tentacles. And so, there is a political Babylon. The governments of this world is not the government of the Messianic era. It's Babylon. The financial system of the world is not based upon Torah. It's financial Babylon. The religious systems of this world is not acknowledging the God of Israel and His sovereignty and the covenant made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It is spiritual Babylon. There's a literal land of Babylon in Iraq. But then I believe the Bible is talking about an end-time spiritual land of Babylon, which in Jeremiah chapter 50, verse 12, in describing this Babylon, it says in the King James, it's the hindermost of the nations. And the Hebrew word is akarit, the Strong's number 319. Look that up in the Strong's. It says latter or end. It refers to an end-time nation that's called Babylon. Well, the United States has only been a country for, you know, a little over 250 years, and it has risen up in the end of the ages. And so, a a very prominent and significant event of the tribulation period in the end of days is the fall of Babylon. So Isaiah chapter 13 talks about the fall of Babylon. Isaiah 21, Isaiah 47, Jeremiah 50 and 51. Different chapters in the book of Revelation, including Revelation in chapter 18. Well, in Isaiah 13 verse 1, it says the burden of Babylon. And then it says in Isaiah 13 verse 6, the day of the Lord is at hand. It says in Isaiah 13 verse 8, pains and sorrows will take hold of her. So it's a prophecy about the fall of this Babylon during the tribulation period. And then it says in Isaiah chapter 13 verse 19, in Babylon the glory of kingdoms shall be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. So it's described as being prominent. A glory of nations. If you believe we're living in the end of ages, if you believe we're living in the final generation, then this Babylonian entity must be existing right now in our world, described as the glory of kingdoms, and I believe it's referring to the United States of America. And then it says in Isaiah chapter 13, verse 17, that He will stir up the Medes against them. The Medes are the Iranians. So, Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, I believe coded to refer to the United States of America, is in a conflict or a war with the Medes or the Iranians. That's a part of the tribulation that is such a significant event that the prophets have written about it as it relates to the end of the ages and the redemption of His people from exile. Because it's when Babylon falls that His people are gathered from the nations of the world. And so in Jeremiah chapter 50, it talks about the judgment and the fall upon Babylon. And there's an initial attack upon Babylon. It says in Jeremiah 51 verse 50, that you that escape the sword, remember the Lord afar off, and let Jerusalem come to your mind. Don't stand still, is what the verse says. In other words, that attack upon Babylon is your sign to begin looking to Jerusalem, looking to return to the land. And the time frame of returning to the land is the Great Tribulation. So the initial attack upon Babylon precedes the Great Tribulation. The attack upon Babylon is a sign of the Great Tribulation. And then there will be a conflict with the Medes or the Iranians. So there's a cross-reference to Isaiah chapter 13, verses 17 through 19, and Jeremiah in chapter 51. And in Jeremiah in chapter 51 and verses 8 through 13, it there in verse 11 says, the Lord has raised up the spirit of the kings of the Medes, that's the Iranians, for His devices against Babylon to destroy it, because it's the vengeance of the Lord. When's the vengeance of the Lord? It's the tribulation period. Who's He taking vengeance upon? The nations. For doing what? Dividing the land of Israel in the city of Jerusalem. And the vengeance of the Lord is associated with a controversy of Zion. Isaiah chapter 34 verse 8 says, Isaiah chapter 34 and verse 8 says, for it is the day of the Lord's vengeance. That's the same time when Babylon's in a conflict with the Medes. And it's for the controversy over Zion. The controversy is, to whom does the land belong? And it's in the midst of the controversy that the God of Israel is going to affirm that Judea, Samaria, commonly called the West Bank and Jerusalem, I've promised this to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I've promised this to David, and I'm a covenant-keeping God, and I'm going to keep my covenant. Because the one who made the covenant is being challenged by the nations, and they're in effect saying, we don't recognize that covenant. We see it as a Palestinian state. We see it as Jerusalem being divided, and we all voted that that's how we see it. The nations are in rebellion. And so He has a controversy with the nations over the issue. And He's going to judge the nations and all those who oppose the covenant. And He's going to fight for those who stand with the covenant. And against greater odds against them, He's going to deliver His people. And the deliverance is going to be so great that the Messiah, who's the one doing the delivering, and gathering his people back to the land. The deliverance is going to be so great that all 12 tribes are going to appoint the Messiah as their head. And the world will know that the Father has sent him. We're talking about something happening on a scale that's never, ever happened before. And through this event, Messiah is being revealed in Zion and out of Zion, and he roars from Zion. And so Sukkot is rehearsing these things. And so I just shared with you in this message then four major signs that I'm watching that indicates to me that I need to be ready and prepared for the great tribulation, Messiah gathering his people and bringing you and I back to the land. That's part of the messianic task of the Messiah. And so I covered the four things that I'm watching. These are not the only four signs, again, but these are four major signs that I see that we can watch in our world, and I'm doing so on a weekly basis and helping you to do it through the blog, thewatchmanofzion.com, and the 5-minute update. And the four things are the nations recognizing a Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital, and secondly, Damascus being destroyed, ceasing from being a city. Third, the United States going to war with Iran. And fourthly, the collapse of the worldwide Babylonian financial system. Now, from war and financial collapse, the world will restructure, Revelation 13, and set up one world government and one world currency. And it's when they do that is when we're told in Zechariah chapter 9, verse 13, he's raised up the sons of Zion against the sons of Greece. The sons of Greece are trying to impose a one world government system and rule over the world and demanding that everyone accept the mark of the beast. But the sons of Zion, his people, he's also raising up, and he's going to fight for the sons of Zion against the sons of Greece, so that we will then see the fulfillment of Revelation 15, 2 and 3. Those that get the victory over the beast, over his mark and his image and number of his name, and they're playing harps, and they're singing the song of Moses, and they're singing the song of the Lamb. And we're going to be remembering this song, not only each year in the kingdom, but for all eternity as well. That's why Sukkot is such a significant and important festival, and that's why Sukkot is called the season of our joy.